morning and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and responding to your email questions. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And you?
I'm great. I've got a little cough, so we'll see if that interrupts the proceedings.
Oh, wow. It's allergies?
I'm not certain.
Two little children?
That could be a piece of it. And I want to say up front that today's show is a pre-recorded show. So if you were thinking of calling in today, please hold that thought for a week till we're on the air live again.
Right.
Yes.
I was thinking about that, getting ready for the show. I thought, usually we, of course, talk about what's going on, what's current.
Yes.
By the time people hear the show, it's a month out in the future. So what's going on now will be in the way past.
Could be.
So time is kind of a fun thing to consider.
Yes, yes. And to me, the fun thing about time and practice is that whatever we're talking about always seems relevant.
Right.
Yeah.
Present is always the present, isn't it?
Yes.
But we don't want to talk about what we're going to be doing for the next few weeks because it will be what we have done for the last few weeks and what seems like it'll be really new and interesting because it's coming up will be something that everybody knows about because it's already passed.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
But fortunately, we have email questions that at this point tend to linger a while.
Yes.
In the beginning, we didn't have so many callers, and so we were pretty good at getting to email questions. But now we tend to take the live calls, which is just seems reasonable.
Yes.
And then those email questions pile up. So it's kind of nice that periodically we have some sort of reason that we can't both be on the air at the same time, and we take advantage of that to catch up a little bit.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Shall I begin?
Yeah.
I have read a few of Sherry's books now and was first introduced to them by a close friend who saw I was at a turning point in my life, meaning that I was growing up and looking for a new path to follow. He gave me, "There is nothing wrong with you, and that which you are seeking is causing you to seek." I took the books and kept them with me for 4 years before reading them. A very dear friend and someone who I depended on for moral, mental, and spiritual support had died unexpectedly in a car accident. Needless to say, I was lost in every way that mattered to me. With nowhere else to turn, with no one else to confide in, feeling lost, sad, confused, and most of all, useless, I incidentally came across those books. I knew then it was time to read them. That's exactly what I did. Once I finished those two books, I was realizing that most of what Sherry was writing about was common sense. For instance, how our personalities were, for the most part, shaped by our parents. We were all told as children to stop that and behave and so on. So, of course, we began to see something wrong with ourselves and how if we let go of our egos, we might get a glimpse of the bigger picture. I loved reading those things in her books. Now it has been 2 years since I read those books, and I have found myself at another path in life. I live with my boyfriend of 4 years and our daughter, who is 18 months. I guess you could say we live an ideal life. We have our own house, new cars, our health, and a lot of loving family. So I'm sure after hearing all that, you're probably wondering what kind of problems would I have. I'm feeling lost in my yoga practice. I'm feeling a little useless in my life. I've recently been diagnosed with two types of anxiety, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and generalized anxiety. I'm also feeling lonely. My boyfriend, I feel, is staying in the same place mentally and spiritually, and I feel as if I'm wanting more than what I've been experiencing. I leave my house every morning just feeling content and a part of me looking for something to fill this void of wanting more or wanting to give more to me, to others, to my boyfriend, and to my daughter. I'm not sure what. I do know that I want to be a better person and find what is leaving me feeling so empty or useless. I want to do more yoga and different kinds of yoga, but I can't seem to cross that bridge. How do I get there? How did Sherry get there? Thank you for taking the time to read this email. This has helped me a great deal to get this out in the open. From a listener in Maine.
All right. Well, there are several things about that. One is that I think what this person is up against is what we're all up against, which is conditioning.
Yes.
Egocentric karmic conditioning and the dissatisfaction that comes from believing oneself to be separate from life. It's the thing that inspires us toward awareness practice, and it's the thing that causes most of the suffering in our lives. So the first thing that to me is really important is to realize that it's not personal. It's not personal. And it's not unusual. You know, that's kind of a difficulty for most of us because at the same time that we want our struggle to be over, we don't like to be told that it's sort of no big deal. Because, and I'm not saying that it's not painful. I'm just saying, yeah, that's what everybody goes through. And so to me, it's a good thing. If it doesn't turn into self-hatred, into something wrong and starting to blame other people and that sort of thing, if it stays in the realm of this is what it feels like to be a conditioned human being, our job as conditioned human beings who are waking up to the fact that that's what we are is to see through the conditioning so that we can let it go, drop it, get into the present moment, and enjoy the lives that we have. And it's so perfect because she lays out the so beautifully the human condition, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Very clear. She has everything that everybody in the world wants, and there's dissatisfaction, and that's the point. Now, conditioning, karma, would have us believe that, no, there's something that needs to change. There's some external that isn't quite right. You know, you've got the wrong partner. You're living in the wrong place. You need a different job. There's something that you need to do or get that's going to make this different. And what she realizes is, no, I have a perfect life, and I'm dissatisfied. That's right. And what she's dissatisfied with is ego. She's not dissatisfied with life or with her life. She's dissatisfied with the constant dissatisfaction of ego. And that's a good thing. It's a great place to be in practice.
Great place in the sense of I have a motivation to wake up now.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going, you know that old, I don't even know if it's true, but for years people have said the Chinese curse, old Chinese curse, may you be born in a happy time.
Yeah.
And so that sense of, ooh, an entire lifetime could be wasted with just kind of going around sound asleep, getting new credit cards and filling them up.
Yeah.
And so to get to a place of recognizing dissatisfaction for what it is and being inspired to take the steps to reclaim one's life from that dissatisfaction, it's a very, very good thing. And, of course, conditioning is going to try to make that mean something awful and make miserable process. But it does that with everything. So that's the whole point, is to see through that suffering conversation, recognize it for what it is, learn to drop it, and be present to life in an attitude of mind of appreciation.
Yes, yes, yes. And as I was listening to you respond, I was thinking of the Gandhi quote about the value of having a worthy opponent.
Yes. Yes, and goodness knows, egocentric karmic conditioning is a worthy opponent.
Yes.
You know, those stories about Zen sword masters, you know, the student comes to learn sword fighting from the master, and they go back and forth with all of these things dealing with the student's conditioning and that sort of thing, and then finally it gets to the point where the master says, you know, the point of this is to pay attention, and if you don't, I'll cut your head off. And suddenly the student goes from kind of a dee-dee-dee-dee-dee attitude to, okay, this is really serious, isn't it? And at that point begins to learn sword fighting. And that's what we're up against with ego.
Yes. Great. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Dear Sherry, I've decided to ask you about something that's been going on with me with awareness practice for quite a while. When I listen to these archives first thing in the morning, I can get very encouraged. This encouragement even, quote, enters my body, unquote, like a rush of a new, alive energy, quite different from the usual, non-differentiated, kind of, quote, flat, unquote, or anxious feeling I experience as, quote, just below the surface of my skin, unquote, many times what I walk out into my day with. Then, in less than 20 seconds, an inner voice, critical, harsh, and sometimes even yelling at me, says, quote, God, you still can't do this for yourself. You've been in this spiritual practice for 8 years and still can't do this on your own. You obviously don't get it and won't ever get it, unquote. It feels like a tidal wave just swept over me and I've disappeared out to sea. It ruins my party totally. How can I go from feeling positive and up, even if it is coming from someone outside of myself, to this miserable, defeated feeling and belief in less than 20 seconds? How do I stop believing it? I have a notion how you'll answer this. But could you please talk about this phenomenon? Because it really does surprise me that I still can't, or is it more honest to say, don't seem to do this when I'm alone with it. I have been able to do it, but very infrequently. Now that I've written all this out, seems that I'm not taking care of myself enough by asserting myself with the conditioning and voices on a daily, consistent basis. Thanks for your support from a listener.
Well, now, there's really no mystery in that. I can only guess that by the time that person wrote it out, they were kind of going, you know, I don't really actually need to send this in. I can see that I have the answers to all these questions. So, you know that there it is. I'm listening to something. I'm meditating. I'm listening to reassurances, a radio show. I've just read something really inspiring, and I open up my computer, and there's the peace quote. I'm feeling great. I'm here. I'm present. I'm clear, filled with energy. What's going to happen? A voice is going to come in, meh, 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 and try to suck all the energy out. And what the writer has noticed is it happens really quickly, and the voice usually wins. It manages to suck the energy out, which is the reason for that whole thing. So, the writer is absolutely correct. The reason, first of all, that story about you've been doing this for 8 years, you can't do it for yourself. You know, the only answer to that is, you're right. That's so. Yep, you're right. Huh. Well, maybe I never will be able to. Next. So at the retreat we just did, we were playing with this thing that we've been actually playing with for the last several retreats that we've done, and that is the two-sentence rule. We may have even talked about it on the radio, but conditioning has two sentences on any given subject. And then that's it. That's the end of it. That's the rule. So if it says stupid, that's one sentence. It gets another sentence on that subject, and then we're on to another subject.
Right.
And if the subject is what's wrong with me, it gets two sentences.
Right.
Not this is what's wrong with you about this, and that's what's wrong with you about that. two sentences.
Right.
So you know, if we get hooked into that kind of thing, that's just it. I mean, it's like getting in an argument with your parent. You know, the only way not to go to that place is don't get into that argument, because as soon as you get into that argument, you're going to turn into a 5-year-old and you're going to lose. So. That's just how it is. And so that's one piece of that. The other thing that the writer is very clear about and absolutely right about is it's an ongoing thing. You don't just get inspired in the morning and then think that the voices are going to leave you alone all day long. The voices are going to be just hammering you all day long, period, whether you're inspired in the morning or not. And so that's the whole point of needing to learn to direct your attention, so that the attention stays on the inspiration, on the present, on gratitude, on oneself and one's life. You know, here I am, I'm up, I'm going about my life, this is what I'm doing, this is the focus. It's not, the attention is not taken to what's wrong with you and ain't it awful and here, give me all your energy. So I guess it was quite recently on the radio, I was on quite a little soapbox with somebody about the kind of effort it takes to turn this around. You know, we're conditioned to believe that everything should be easy. And if it's not easy, then there's something wrong. But what we're going up against is a lifetime of energy-sucking, brainwashing program. And we're not going to just be able to say, gosh, I see that and I don't want that, and expect it to go away. It's not going to happen. So if we want to have a different life experience, we have to put as much energy into not giving our energy away as the energy sucking system is putting into sucking our energy out of us. That's just how it is. And so in a tug of war, you know, if you want to win the tug of war, you have to pull harder than the other team. If you pull as hard as the other team, then it's a standoff. You know, and everybody stands there and pulls until their arms give out, right? So if you don't pull as hard, you're going to get pulled over. If you pull harder, you're going to pull the other team over. That's how a tug of war works. And that's the way it is with conditioning. So if we want to win this little tug of war, we have to be more aware and more present, more willing and more dedicated, more vigilant in our efforts than conditioning is in it. And then we will win. And there's no doubt about it. It is as simple and straightforward as that.
Wow. That's inspiring.
Yeah, if we don't do that, we will lose. You know, if a person does not learn to direct attention, they are going to be the victim of whatever it is that is directing the attention. Now, the thing we have to realize is, whoa, wait a minute, it's my attention. So I need to be the one directing it. But if I don't take responsibility for that, if it's too hard and I don't feel like it and I forgot, well, then conditioning is going to direct the attention, and it's going to direct it to suffering.
Yes.
It's just, you know, again, it's not personal. You know, people get all balled up about how I'm doing this wrong, and if I were a different person, and why is this happening to me? It's just the way it is. When the sun sets, it gets dark. It's not personal. And when we get to December and the sun sets at 4:30 or whatever it is and it's dark at 5, I take it personally. But it's not personal.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Ready for the next question?
Yeah.
Sherry, first off, I'm a big fan of yours. I really enjoy your books and the handful of CDs I've listened to. I most recently listened to your CD on relationships and must tell you, I think you're a flat-out hoot. I downloaded your...
Flat-out what?
Hoot. H-O-O-T.
Oh.
I downloaded your CD to my iPod and listened to it on one of my bike rides and thoroughly enjoyed it. I was laughing out loud as I listened. I know people must have thought I was wacky or something, but I just kept laughing and riding. I got hung up, though, on a couple of points you were making and was wondering if you would be so kind as to clarify. Here is what I transcribe you saying from the CD. If I am in a place of loving you as much as I can possibly love you, I am doing the very best I can do to love you all the time. I'm going to believe that you're doing the same thing because that will be my projection. If I suspect that I'm not, then I will suspect that you are not. So the life experience that we have is our own. That's the end of the quote. And the listener has two questions. Number one, you make it sound like I live my life projecting my experience. That sounds absurd. I could project until the cows come home, but my projection doesn't control your reaction to me. Does it?
You know, there was such confidence there for a moment.
Yes.
And then the, does it?
It seems nonsensical. I could love you with every fiber in my being and hope that you love me back with as much intensity and loyalty. However, that doesn't make it so, you know? Please clarify this.
Well, the thing about it is so. We are projecting all the time, and we are creating our reality out of our projections. So, you know, I am, I have my version of what love is. I mean, anybody who's ever been in a relationship knows that this is true. People are loving the other person the way they want to be loved. And almost everybody misses that. Yeah? So, you know, you really feel loved when I do your laundry and fold your clothes and put the stuff in the drawer. And I feel really loved when I get flowers. So I send you flowers and you fold the laundry. And neither one of us can figure out why, you know, what's wrong with this? Why? So, I mean, that's simplistic, but that's the way it is. So, you know, I love somebody intensely and wholeheartedly and blah, blah, blah. And I have an idea about what that person loving me is going to be like. And if what they're doing and being doesn't fit that, then there we are. Now, you know, if we're talking about being in love with someone, wanting to be in an intimate relationship with someone, that's true. I can be wildly attracted to someone who's not attracted to me at all. What I make all that mean is my projection. So somebody recently called up and was in love with somebody who didn't return that love and made that mean there's something wrong with me, I'm unattractive. Well, that's all made up. You know, there have been a lot, I don't know about you, but I've just known a ton of really attractive people that I wasn't in love with.
Yes.
So, you know, those things just don't go together. So are we creating our own world through our projections? Indeed we are. Everything that we look at, we are interpreting, we're evaluating, we're assigning meaning to. Even the labels that we put on everything are ours. They're not objective reality. So I'm going to stick to it.
Okay, good.
I said it, and I'll say it again, by golly.
Okay, question number two. So living in the moment is all we really ever have, right? It's not a question of if as much as it is when I feel emotions or thoughts. The thing to know is that they consist of energy, and if I simply allow that energy to pass through my body and mind and acknowledge them without attaching to them, That's the key, and it allows me to experience the energy while also not getting caught up in it. Is this correct? I know you dislike the terms right, wrong, but for clarification purposes, please comment. And then there's a little bit more after this.
Okay, well, yes. I mean, certainly that is the case, that energy is moving around. You know, I look at my love in a passionate embrace with the next door neighbor, and some energy is going to go through my body. And I'm going to have an opportunity to see what is attached to that, what labels go with that, what meaning goes with that, what's the story that goes with that. And if I were able to simply feel that energy go through the body and not need to come up with labels or meaning or stories to explain what I'm seeing, then the energy would pass through rather quickly and we would just go on with our lives. Maybe we'd have to be moving some furniture from one house to the other, but, you know, that would be that. And I don't particularly, you know, I'm not here to idealize experience. I'm just interested in how things work. And so I'm not saying it's a better thing not to assign meaning to something. I think it's incredibly helpful to notice when one is assigning meaning to something and what that meaning is, and also to be aware that the meaning is made up.
Yeah.
So often when we start down the road toward not being attached to something, what we're doing is moving out of you know, whatever, right, wrong, correct, incorrect, and into shoulds. So there's an idea lurking there that there is a right way to be and a right way to do things, and that one should be that way, and then one's experience is being compared to how one should be, and we've left the land of awareness and gone into the land of conditioning. So for me, it's more seeing how things work, seeing what the reactions are, what the meaning is, what the story is, what the feelings are, what I call them, the conditioned behaviors that go with that. That's what's interesting. And as we see those things for what they are, they tend to fall away, and we don't have to worry about whether we're attached or not attached.
Yes, yes. And the last bit here is, thanks in advance for reading and responding to this email. I really want to learn and grow, and I feel like I understand many of your concepts. Now, applying them and remembering to apply them are a different story, huh? And again, thanks for the work that you do.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, I'm always encouraging people it's great to read books. It's great to listen to CDs. Goodness knows I think that is the case, or I would stop writing books and making CDs. But that does not substitute for practice. And so much of what we run into is people being surprised that an intellectual understanding doesn't take them where they want to be. So, you know, I can have an intellectual understanding of where New York City is. I could point it right out on the map, but that is not the same as going there. The experience of going there, of going there mile by mile, making that journey, that transition, that's the thing that is actually significant for us. That's the thing that transforms us. Just looking at a map and saying, oh yeah, that's New York, that's not going to make the difference in your life that actually going to New York and being in New York is going to make. And so I'm always encouraging people to practice. And, you know, that means taking on something that is difficult and staying with it until it's accomplished. And as you know, 99% of that for me is that what's revealed in that process is everything that's in place that is causing us to suffer. And again, as we see that and see it for what it is, it falls away. But if we don't confront, we will stay where we are, and the understanding that we've gained intellectually will be used against us by conditioning, a la the, I think it was the first writer, that feeling of listening to voices tell you, you've been doing this for 8 years and you still can't do it.
Right.
That's an opportunity right there to say, okay, fine, then we're going to take practice to a new level.
Yeah.
I'm going to the monastery.
Yeah.
I'm going on retreat. I'm going to up this so that I am really in practice on a more regular basis, and I'm gaining more support for bringing these changes out of an intellectual understanding and into actuality in my life.
Yes. Yes. And that was from a listener in North Carolina.
One of my favorite places.
Yes. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Today's show is a pre-recorded show, so please don't call us today. You can reach us again when we're on the air live. Ready for the next question, Sherry?
I am.
Dear Sherry and Michael, thank you for your radio program and for your time and effort. I have only been practicing compassionate awareness for a very short time, maybe a month, and I have already discovered a lot about the way I react to people and about myself and my conditioning. Today I had a huge problem come up for me where I had an argument with my boss at work. I have been having trouble arriving on time to appointments and work for years, and I know that this is a problem not only for me, but for my managers as well. I had a meeting with my supervisor today, and she raised the issue of my being late. She used language that made me think that she was calling me unprofessional and that she didn't want to hear any excuses but wanted me to be in by 9 a.m. I became very angry and tried to say that I wasn't unprofessional and that I had raised this issue with her. I then noticed that this was not really an issue for me because I could just show up at 9 a.m. by putting in some more effort and the problem would be gone. I felt disidentified from the part of me that wanted to make an issue out of this situation, and then suddenly this huge amount of pain came through. I was actually feeling extremely hurt that I had been misunderstood. I then saw that self-hate had led me to this pattern of constantly being late and led me to show myself as not putting any effort in. And I finally see now, as I write this letter, that I can link this situation to a karmic pattern I have of seeing myself as misunderstood, and this keeps me acting in ways that I know will lead me to seem unprofessional and slack at my job. I'm now not sure what to take from this event. I can see how I am projecting my judgmental and controlling and insensitive conditioning onto my boss. And I see how, by being late all the time, I have not helped my situation. I know that I have a karmic relationship with seeing myself as misunderstood, but I also can find no way of being understood by my boss. Parentheses. I can see that conditioning may have played a role in writing that last sentence. End parentheses. Maybe for now I should just show up on time if that's what it takes to make her happy. At least it would resolve one source of tension. Any suggestions for how I should proceed with my practice on this matter?
Well,
thank you very much from a listener in England.
I do have a suggestion. First of all, this individual, I predict, this is, me being the clairvoyant or whatever it is. I'm predicting the future now. This person has a great deal of fun ahead with awareness practice. Because that kind of clarity from somebody who is new to practice bodes well for the future. Now, my encouragement would be, don't do anything with this except drop it. Just drop it. Because it's perfect as it is. The whole thing is perfect. And I project that the information came through in that intuitive way that that I encourage people regularly is the only worthwhile way to receive information. It came as an insight. So here she is. I'm guessing this is a she. So I'm going to say she.
Yes.
He can write back. How dare you? So she has this moment of clarity. So the boss is upset that she's late. Well, that's the boss's job. Okay? You hire somebody to be there at 9 o'clock. You pay them for the job. They need to be there at 9 o'clock. It's not a personal thing. You know, it's not like, you're just being mean to me. No, you were hired, and these are the conditions of your employment. So, you know, on that level, there's just not a leg to stand on. You're wrong.
Yeah.
And so within that, then there's the insight that says, wow, I have this whole karmic thing going about being misunderstood. And because of that karmic conditioning, conditioning would interpret this situation as me being misunderstood, when in fact, I'm completely understood, right? You're late. It's unprofessional. You need to be on time. End of story.
Yeah.
So to see all of that and recognize that the whole thing is a setup to take her to that place of feeling misunderstood, my gosh, you know, she ought to give a bonus to the boss for helping play her role in revealing that piece of karma.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what conditioning wants to do after that is noodle it. Okay, well, what about this, and what should I do, and what does that mean? And just take the insight, be transformed by it, say three thank yous, heartfelt thank yous, and then get on with life and just keep your eyes open and wait for the next insight, because that's where transformation happens.
Yeah.
If we can be in a situation and get that kind of clarity, just simply say, got it, thank you, drop it, you know, I mean, take the steps, yes, then, you know, the hard work is to get past the landmines in order to get there by 9 a.m. every day, which is, you know, one's responsibility. Once we get that kind of clarity, you got to follow through on it. And don't let conditioning take it into a, well, what about this and what about that and she should have this and how come that and, but they, you know, drop the conversation. And the insights will just start pouring in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very inspiring.
Yeah.
Very, very good story.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fun for me when people write in with the question, and by the end it seems like they've gotten to that place of clarity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And to be able to reinforce that point that there's nowhere to go with that.
Yes.
I mean, you got it. It's like a, you know, you went to a workshop, they did a little, you know, a little process, a little guided imagery, a little, you know, whatever it is, you got the insight, you have the clarity, you're changed, leave the workshop, go on with your life.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Wonderful. Okay, next question.
All right.
Hi, Sherry. I am on day 4 of your Making a Change for Good guided retreat. I have chosen something to focus on for the 30 days that I thought was not a huge issue for me. I thought it would be better to choose something smaller to begin with. The problem is, now the voices are constantly chattering at me, telling me I made the wrong choice. That if I'm going to dedicate 30 days to changing something, should be one of the things I really want to change.
Okay, we have to stop here, okay? Because that wherever the person is going, we can hear the rest of it in a minute, but that, you know, that's the whole deal right there. the content, the current content is you've made the wrong choice. The whole point is get out of the chattering conversation with the voices of conditioning. They're always chattering. They're always angling. They're always trying to point out that there's something wrong. That's just what they do. We cannot validate that by saying, so what about this particular piece of content? The content is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the person picked. The point is, don't be in that conversation. It is useless. There is nothing about it that is necessary or helpful. Just don't do it. Did the person write more?
Yes. They are telling me that I don't really care about changing this, don't even really want to, that it's a waste of this great process to spend it on this content, as if this is the only chance I'll get, in parentheses, that I should focus on exercise or money or something more important. Some of the voices sound practical, and I have almost come to believe them a few times. I was expecting resistance, but not this full-scale sabotaging. My question is this. Do you think this level of resistance is a sign that I was underestimating how charged this issue is for me?
No, I do not think that. I do not think that at all. I think what the person is underestimating is what conditioning will do to stay in charge of every moment. The conditioning doesn't care a fig about the content. It wouldn't matter. If the person chooses something huge, conditioning is going to launch on that. If the person can pick something that seems relatively small or relatively simple, conditioning is going to launch on that. People have to understand that conversation has only to do with grabbing all of the life force, taking up all of the space, consuming all of the energy. It has nothing to do with any content at all. Nothing.
Wow. So anything that results in suffering is good enough.
Oh, absolutely. And if you notice, this is the world of duality, and it is always in an au contraire position. So if I say yes, it says no. If I want to do that, it says I shouldn't. If I don't want to do that, it says I should. If I'm this kind of a person, I should be that kind of a person. It's the world of opposites. That's all it's trying to do is get into opposition, start an arm wrestling contest, and it's not even about winning. It's not even that it's trying to win the contest. It's the wrestling that it's going for. The only way out of it is to turn our attention away from the conversation. That's it. You cannot converse with that voice and expect it to lead anywhere except suffering.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
It's like talking to somebody who hates you. It's exactly like that, as a matter of fact. You know, it's just not going to go well. It's not.
Right. Right.
Because the assumption would be, but this person wants me to win them over, or all I need to do is prove what a nice person I am, or here, I'll help this person see how kind-hearted and well-intentioned I am. What I need to do is, no. All of that misses the point. The point is the person hates you. That's not going to change.
Yes, yes, yes. And the last two sentences here, it seems that if it is causing this kind of backlash to change, It seems that if it is causing this kind of backlash to change what I thought was a relatively minor behavior, my reasons for engaging in that behavior must go a lot deeper than I realized. Or am I overthinking this?
Yeah, way. I mean, that's the that's the whole deal.
Yeah.
So, okay, then now I've got to question myself and second guess. You know, the whole point of this is for the person to get to see what conditioning is doing. That's the whole point.
Yes.
It's not a self-improvement course. It's not like I'm going to pick a fault that I have and I'm going to spend 30 days correcting that fault, and at the end of that 30 days, I'll be the person I should be. It is exactly the opposite of that. Over that 30-day period, I will get a chance to look at how conditioning manipulates, sabotages, lies, and generally controls my life so that it has my life force. That's what we're doing. So seeing how conditioning is doing that whole, okay, well then maybe this means this, and then, okay, well then maybe I should do, okay, well maybe what it means, that's the process we're attempting to reveal, not figure out what is the right piece of content to work on.
Right. Wow. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Yeah. It's so difficult to communicate because the brainwashing is so deep.
Yes.
People just automatically go right back to looking to conditioning to tell them what the right answer is. And it's what I'm trying to get people to do is see how they look to conditioning to get the right answer. But then they look to conditioning to find out what is the right answer to that.
Yes.
Tricky.
Yes. Okay, ready for the next question?
Yeah. We are getting through them today.
We are getting through several of them, yes. And we have a few minutes left here. Hello. Could you please explain the significance of the left hand on top of the right in the meditation mudra? I am familiar with this mudra from previous practices, but in those, the right hand has been placed on top of the left. I also find that having my teeth touch puts some tension on my jaw muscles, and I am much more comfortable with my jaw in a naturally relaxed position, parentheses 3 to 4 millimeters apart, while placing my tongue in position. Could you also explain the significance of the teeth touching, and might I remain with my lower jaw in a more relaxed position instead? Thank you from a listener.
Sure. Why not? You know, again, what people want to do is figure stuff out. And it misses the point. So why put the hands like that? Well, what happens to you when that happens? So to me, it's much more interesting that I've done other practices and the right hand was on the top. And so now you're saying put the left hand on the top. Why? How about see what happens? You know, somebody came up with this stuff. And they came up with it for a reason, because they had a particular experience and thought that that would be a significant experience for other people to participate in as well. So how about seeing what that's like? You know, people will tell me all the time in meditation, and I try to just count, but I can't, because then I get focused on, you know, and then I feel like it's... So there's all this stuff that, you know, that's not going to work, and that's not comfortable. And I go back to that place of, if this were easy, it would be more popular. And so rather than, once again, looking to conditioned mind for, now what does this mean, and why should I do this, and how does that work, and what, how about having the experience and see what happens. So that puts tension in my jaw. Well, why? Does it have to? Is that a given? If my teeth touch, my jaw has to be tight? Is it possible for the teeth to touch and the jaw not to be tight? How about finding that out? Rather than, I do this and this happens, okay, that's a problem, I need to ask about that, and then I'll get an answer, and then what? You know, either, no, that's wrong, or, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So constantly turning to conditioning to understand something, to figure something out, to get a right answer, rather than sitting still with it and seeing what happens. The almost everybody that I work with before very long says, well, you know, I can't sit like that, or I can't whatever it is. I can't hold my body like that because I can't do that because my hips, I can't do that because my knee, I can't do that because my, and the I can't do that, you know, what we really ought to go to is, well, you know, I can't be free, or I can't end suffering, or I can't find liberation, because that's what that sentence actually is saying. So instead of, after 15 seconds, I can't, how about, huh, wow, well, that's not natural for me.
Yeah.
Huh, well, now, that's not easy and automatic. Now, a lot of things are easy and automatic. For instance, I can sit in almost any meditation posture, and my toes don't hurt. Okay, this is good.
Sherry?
Making great progress. Now I just have to bring the rest of the body along. So how do I make this work rather than assuming I am where I need to be and I am limited? What about I am where I am, which I actually don't understand? I have no idea what is available to me. I don't even have an idea about how to find out what's available to me in this moment. But if I stay with it, if I continue to pay attention and continue to practice, I'm going to trust, because people have been saying since before recorded history, people have been saying, if you do these things, it will work. You will go from suffering to freedom. So I'm drawn to this.
Sure.
I think those people were probably onto something. I'm going to try it. And if it doesn't work right away, I'm going to explore what's not working, rather than just going to, I can't.
Great. Great. Sherry, we're at the end of our time here.
Well, we have to do this again, Michael, because I have a few more thousand things to say on these subjects.
We'll do it again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.